Radio Warwickshire.
Also, now it's time to, like I said, is talking to Jackie Chappell, and just a quick overview of that, and she'll talk into more detail. But back in the day, she was the first female CEO of British Rail, which I think is outstanding. I think she's an awesome individual and a lady, and I know she'll probably hate me for saying that, but I think she's absolutely brilliant. So Jackie's going to just talk a bit about her background and about her business, and hopefully you'll get some insight into her and what she does in her business, and hopefully that'll help you on your journey. So without further ado, I'm going to pass over to Jackie. Jackie, thanks for coming on the show. Really amazing that you've agreed to be with me today, so thanks for that.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Kirk, and I always feel so gobsmacked, I suppose, that people find my story awesome, because at the time it was just me getting on with things. And you know that I've talked to these people here today at this meeting about standing out from the crowd, which is something, you know, one of the things I've always tried to do, except for the first 17 years of my life when I tried just to fit in. But I guess what I'd like to talk to your listeners about really at the moment is about passion. Because I think you really have to do what you love and love what you do. I think that's really important. And I've only ever once, and as you know, I'm not young anymore, usually the oldest person in the room, but I never had a job where I hated Mondays. Mm. I think when that day came, I would either give up or retire.
Yeah.
Just one job when I dreaded being there and clock watched. So if people are out there and they're thinking about starting their own business, what they should remember is you have to give it everything. So if you don't love it, don't bother.
Great. That's great
and
advice.
As Brad always says, if you've got a plan B, you don't believe in your plan A. So make sure your plan A is something you really want to do.
Yeah.
And so going back on that, I've worked since, I think my first job was 11 years old, sacking up potatoes in the back of a fruit and veg shop, because they would get tons of potatoes loose. I'd have to weigh them up and tie them. I used to get filthy, but I didn't care. I wouldn't say it's the best job I've ever had, but I had the best shoes of all the girls in my class. And girls would recognise that. Shoes are important.
Hey, I like shoes as well.
Yeah, but I had my own money, you see. So my parents would buy me school uniform shoes and playing shoes. Not enough for the young me.
Yeah.
I wanted fashion.
Yeah.
So and my second job, surprisingly enough, was a Saturday job in Freeman Hardy and Willis, the shoe shop. And I had the latest trends then. I just worked for shoes. I didn't work for money.
Yeah.
But seriously, you have to love what you do. So that's why education is important. And I was extremely lucky to get into one of the best grammar schools around where I live. It was an unhappy time because all the girls owned ponies except for me. I came from a council house. But that's the thing. You don't let your beginnings hold you back.
That's brilliant.
It's not where you start, it's where you finish.
Great.
And I have, as you know, finished up in some quite awesome positions. Now, the railway I joined because my marriage had broken up, I had two small kids, a mortgage to pay, and I had started out a business as a sideline to my corporate job. Brilliant job, Porsche GB, loved that job. So I started there and needed more money because my first ever mortgage.
Yep.
And so I had this market stall selling wool and jumpers that I hand knitted and that kind of thing. And a friend of mine and I had always wanted to actually own our own business, a shop, selling toys, haberdashery, wool. So the market stall was so successful, we decided we'd open the shop. Unfortunately, neither of us knew enough about business planning to recognise how huge the overheads would be at the time.
Yes, that's a really good tip.
It is. You do have to think about how much you can afford to lose. A bit like gambling. Don't gamble what you can't afford to lose.
Yeah.
And so there I was with a very lucrative market stall, ploughing every penny that I could into a shop that... A ball of wool is not very much, so you need to sell a hell of a lot of balls of wool to pay the rent on the shop.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're selling a car, you can have lovely big premises because you sell one car and that's a chunk of money.
Yeah.
So just think about your position in the market, I would say. And we probably, with our ambition and our passion, didn't give enough thought.
Yes.
Seemed like a good idea. Yeah. But we had a few bad breaks as well. It wasn't just poor planning on our behalf, a couple of bad breaks. But anyway, so we've done this, and of course I'm struggling for money again, aren't I? Because we're ploughing money back into the business, and I've given up my corporate job. My boss said, don't do it, Jackie, don't do it. But I did, and there's nothing that will stop me making something work.
Yeah, I know, because you're very determined.
Grit
very,
and determination, you've got to have a lot of that in business too. So I'm scouring the papers, and I found this part-time job, 5:30 in the morning to 9:30. My introduction to the railway and unsocial hours, actually.
Yeah.
And it was the best paid part-time job you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
I earned more in that part-time job than I've earned in a lot of full-time jobs, I could tell you, you know, when you're starting out.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've gone, and I actually, when I joined the railway, in those days it was British Rail, and it was like joining a family. So I immediately not felt that I belonged, because I didn't. I stuck out like a sore thumb because I was a woman. But I did feel like I belonged because of the close-knit community that I joined. It wasn't easy. In fact, it was extremely difficult being a woman in, you know, in the first position. My first one was an assistant ticket examiner. They'd never had a woman working on a train before. They'd never had a woman in that depot before.
Wow.
My uniform was a man's uniform, but with a lady's hat. Well, not even a lady's, St Trinian's hat was. Oh, it did not look amazing.
No, I bet.
So, obviously, the guard banished me to first class, told me not to get under his feet for the rest of the shift.
Yeah.
And he was like that till about Thursday, when he was exhausted and realised he needed all of his time to do the train safety. He didn't have time for tickets. He finally said, right, you start the other end, I'll meet you in the middle.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, I've arrived, that's okay. I was very lucky, I guess, standing out, not just because I was a woman, but because my work ethic, and because I wouldn't let things get me down. And I don't believe there's any point doing anything unless you're going to do it to the best of your ability.
Yeah,
I just have, I'm very driven. Mm. I like to be the best I can be at everything, the best mum. I'm obviously not the best wife, I'm divorced, but you know, the best at everything I can be. So I have this mantra in business, which is lead, follow, or get out of the way. We can't all be chiefs. Some of us got to be Indians, you know?
Yep.
And if you're not going to be a good Indian, then don't stand in the way of people who want to be a good Indian. That's my get out of the way bit, which people think is harsh. So I have been lucky to have some really good leaders, and they, if you are a good Indian, they'll find places for you.
Yep.
And I had an area leader who, area manager, who, he didn't manufacture opportunities, but every now and then there, a vacancy list would come round and it would be nudge, nudge, next step, apply. He had no control over whether I got it or not. It was on my own merit. But he would say, I think that's a good spot for you, because he recognised my potential. And I have always, ever since then, with employees, colleagues, whoever they are, I try to recognise potential in other people.
Yes.
That's why the job that I did for the longest on the railway was being in charge of the training programmes, right from YTS, graduate programmes. And that was where I really, I guess, made my mark and made my name, because that's something I am so passionate about.
Mm.
Helping other people achieve their full potential is so rewarding. I mean, you don't get any money out of it, you don't get any kudos.
No.
But that feeling when, you know, they've really achieved, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And to think you've had a little hand in helping them do that.
Yeah, I get that, because my journey, and that's what I do in my business now, I didn't realise until after I'd left corporate life, but all throughout my career, all I was doing all the way through was helping people. And I know what you mean. I've seen people where they've been overlooked, and then I've developed and helped them, given the confidence.
Yes.
And when they blossom into this amazing person, it just gives you such energy, doesn't it?
It does.
It'd be worth £1,000 to me.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's like, you couldn't give me money to take that feeling away.
Exactly, yeah? Exactly. And this is why I always say to people in business, whether you're corporate or an entrepreneur, you really have to remember that, you know. Always look after, you know, be grateful and look after the people who help you on the way up, because if you're nasty to them, there won't be a hand put out for you when you're on your way down.
They won't catch you, will they?
They won't catch you. So, but not even just to be caught on the way down, if you are on the way down. I think it's important. I think we owe it. So if we've had, okay, so people would say to me, Jackie, you worked really hard to get where you were. I would always say, yes, but I had opportunities as well. You know, and people have obviously recognised things in me that they've helped me. So I feel duty-bound to then do that to the next batch of people.
Yeah.
You know, always I will, even in my business now, and it's ironing and cleaning, I will look from inside to promote people to managers, team leaders, get them qualifications, get them confidence in what they're able to do. And and you do exactly see them blossom.
And that's not only, you're doing that for, you're not doing that subconsciously as a tactic to do, you know, develop your business or anything like that. You're doing it because you genuinely, I know you do it because you genuinely believe in doing that for people.
For
without,
people.
With no ulterior
motive.
That's the one.
Right,
they're the words, you got my words out for me. But what that does, it gives you so much back in return, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, that you can't even put down on paper where it is. And those people even, and you said something which people would find really very strange when you've just been doing your public speaking, we've just been listening to you, about one of your employees who wants to set up her own business, and you've actually gone and helped her set her own business up, and could be deemed as a direct competition. A lot of people listening think, that's absolutely bonkers, why would you do that?
There is no competition. Why is there competition? I'm unique, you're unique.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if there's 20 cleaning companies in Reading. I am unique, I'm the most expensive. But I try to be the best.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if I'm value for money. There is no other cleaning company like my cleaning company. And the part of that is that we interview our clients. We don't take clients that won't be appreciative, because why would I send my girls somewhere?
Correct.
If they don't care about their home, why would I send my girls there to care about it for them? We like discerning clients who want a good company that care as much about their happiness in their home as they do. So I'm not going to send a girl in who's sloppy. I don't want a customer who's sloppy. You know, some of my girls will come back and they've spent 4 hours slog on a really hot day cleaning a house, and then, you know, they just drag dirty stuff all across the floor that hasn't even dried and the girls have just finished it.
Yeah.
And it's their home. I think that's a little bit rude. They could just wait.
Yeah, because at the end of it, even though that's someone else's home, that's an extension of your business and your brand. So
yes.
I can understand why you're doing it, because that dilutes your brand, doesn't it?
It
dilutes
does.
Your offering, your service.
Yeah.
And you'll probably find those customers, because I mean, there's a saying that the customer's always right, and I don't believe the customer is always right.
Most of the time.
So you're better off without those individuals than having them as part
exactly.
of your client base.
So I've a wife, right? And she's booked us to clean. We've cleaned her house. It's absolutely spotless. And the husband comes and slops stuff all over the kitchen floor while it's still wet, lets 4 dogs run wild all over the place. She comes home. What's she going to think? Mm. She's just paid a fortune to have her place spotless when she walks through the door, and it isn't.
And then she's picking the phone up to you saying, your girls aren't doing
a
very good
I
think that's quite important, that, because you're talking about your business, your brand, your all the ethos of your business and what you're about. And I think that's really powerful for people to understand, that I think a lot of people that are setting off in business or aren't actually in business think they've got to take everything that's off of the way and chase everything that's out there, and you don't, do you? If you focus on what you want,
if you can afford to do that, because I have to say, at the beginning, I suggest everything, absolutely everything. And if people tried to beat me down on price, I probably did bend a bit there as well. I don't now. I don't need to. When you're starting out, you're positioning yourself. If you can afford it, it's wonderful. If you don't give discounts, you don't give offers, you don't compete, you know, if you can afford not to do that and place yourself in that niche right from the start, that's the best way to go. Yeah. Sometimes you need a bit of butter on your bread and you might have to accept stuff that's, you wouldn't otherwise.
I do like that.
But you gradually lose that. Yeah.
I think Brad talks about that. I'm sorry about talking about Brad again, but I think he talks about that when he's talking about being a public speaker and moving on that. And he basically says you have to go to the opening of an envelope.
Absolutely.
Until, because you're very experienced and you've got to grow your value, people have got to see what you're doing, and then you can start saying, no, I don't want to do that, I want to do that. So I think that's a really good point that you brought up there, and a really good way of explaining it. I think that's perfect.
But it works the same for me with my business. I can now be more careful about the customers I choose, because then it shows that I appreciate the quality of my staff, and it proves that I believe in the quality of the service we provide. But with the public speaking, I don't only want to do paid gigs. I like doing the ones where I can make a difference, because Brad always says, here we go, Brad, sorry, Brad. He says, come away with experience, assets, like photos or a testimonial, or cash. Well, it's not about the cash for me, because it's back to making a difference. You know, a few people have said to me today, you know, after my foresight, and said, oh, you know, I can really relate to that experience.
And yes.
And if one or two people out of that room listen to the bit I said about corporate responsibility and giving back to schools and the next generation and trying to instill in them this excitement about the world of work, be it corporate or entrepreneurial, you know, if just one of them chose to go to a school and give something back, which means so much to those young people, they'll never forget, then I've done something. Mm. You know, so it doesn't have to be a paid gig for me. If I can help somebody, I get my reward back.
Yeah, I think
that sounds a bit altruistic, but
when you get to that level and you can do that, and you can give that time, and people say, oh yeah, well, I've got room. You can do that in a time when it's not necessarily the time when you're working or you're earning money. You can give it in a bit of your free time or what have you, and that, like you say, that hour or that couple of hours in a classroom could, and I do public speaking and do it around the dyslexia, and I say the same thing. If I went into a school and it was 250 kids and I only affect one child in that school, that's fine.
Job done.
You know, because I talk, and that's what this show's about. It's, I'm talking to me that's 6 years ago.
Yes.
Sat in a job, didn't enjoy the job. And that's the same thing. And you'll do the same thing when you do your public speaking. I'm talking to me back in school at 11-year-old. So it's exactly the same thing. And I think if more people realise that and adopt that attitude and help somebody else, if you've got a skill and you can help somebody else, then go and help somebody else.
Absolutely. And I guess really this is the opportune moment to say to Mr. Yeowood, my religious knowledge teacher all those years ago, shouting down the corridor, Jacqueline Goodson, you'll amount to nothing. Thank you, Mr. Yeowood. Proved you wrong.
I think he pushed you, did he?
I think he did. It's like a dare. And, you know, he said, you'll amount to nothing.
I look at you now and I've met you and I've known you for some time now, and I could never imagine anyone saying to you now, you'd never amount to nothing. And I think that's quite interesting, because there'll be people out there listening who have been told or are being currently told by the family, by the school teacher, by their employer, you're nothing, you'll never be nothing,
it won't work. You're no good.
Why are you doing that? And I think you've got to ignore, if you've something inside telling you, I want to do this or I'm good at this, then do it, and don't let anybody tell you any different, because I think life's too short.
Life is too short for everything, and it's not just other people telling you you can't do something, it's your inside voices.
I like that.
You know, and people say to me, oh, you're such a confident speaker. You didn't see me in the toilet before, shaking like a leaf, thinking, oh, why did I say I'd come? You know,
because
my inside voices say, why does anybody want to listen to you?
It's interesting.
What do they want to hear you? even people that sort of know me, they'll say, you know, I've seen on Twitter that you're speaking at this business networking show, and they'll say, what are you talking about then? I'll say, oh, I'm talking about me, my career, you know, my career path. You know, why? Why does anybody want to listen to that? And so that's me in the loo before a talk thinking, why does anybody want to hear this? You know, so don't listen to your inside voices holding you back.
You know, last year, last December, I specifically drove from the Midlands to Manchester to watch you speak because I'd met you at a public speaking course and really liked your story. I thought, oh, well, come see you actually speaking because we didn't have time to watch you. So that's what I did, to go and watch you speak. And I think we like to... I like public speakers who are genuine, I can relate to, and they've got a good story. I think you have all that. You're sending out a very strong message. And I don't want to go down the feminist route and the female route. What you achieved in your career, if you'd have been a man, you'd achieve the same thing.
Yes.
The fact that you was a female in that environment makes it even more amazing, because you'd have done the same. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I think you've changed that industry, and you've changed the way that works, and the way the amount of females are working in that environment. And I think that's what people relate to. They can, because that inner voice that you've got, everybody in the audience has got that same inner voice.
Yes.
Saying, I wish I could do that, or I could never do that. And I think that's, you've actually got the courage, because of your, can't remember your teacher's name.
Mr. Yearwood,
saying you'll never match nothing. He's at the back of your mind pushing you onto that stage.
Absolutely.
And I love watching you. I mean, Jackie's a public speaker, if you've not picked that up. Check her out, because she's amazing. We'll have missed TBNS now by the time this is aired, but I'm sure she's on some other business shows coming up as well. So.
Yes, all the business expos. I'm doing the Biz Expo in Birmingham on the 1st of November. And other expos, Southwest, Thames Valley, Midlands, they're on Twitter all the time. I speak at all of them, which is where you saw me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's quite interesting, you know, how that all started. A friend of mine is a presenter on Marlow FM radio station. She does Mid-Morning Matters, kind of like it's a mixture between a business show and people with inspiring stories. And she always likes to have a few guests on. And so she's on the lookout all the time. And this must be going back 4 years now. And 3 years, sorry. So somebody said to her, oh, you should invite Jackie on your show. She's really interesting. And so Mary said, well, who's Jackie? They said, oh, she's the ironing lady in Reading. And Mary's immediate reaction was, why would I want to talk to a woman who irons shirts in Reading on my radio show in Marlow? They said, you'd be surprised, she's got a story to tell. So Julie, Mary invited me onto the show, and of course she wheedled out of me the story, the railway story, and that, what position I got to and things like this. And when we came off after the show, she said, you are gobsmacking, that story is amazing.
It is.
She said, her other guest was a lady who was launching the Sue Ryder Business Women of Achievement Awards 2014. So Mary said, I'm going to nominate you. And I laughed, thinking, yeah. Because you say, you know, a throwaway comment.
Yeah.
And bless her, she nominated me and I won Business Woman of the Year. And that is how I came to do all of this. I won that. I was booked for the business expos. I met Brad because either I would be his warm-up woman or he'd be my warm-up man.
Yeah.
And so 2 years of that, and then, of course, the Brad camps last year where I met you. It's kind of changed my life.
Yeah.
I was happy being anonymous, really. I'm not anonymous in Reading, I could assure you.
No,
I'm not anonymous on the railway, but anonymous is the ironing lady
exactly,
in Reading.
Exactly.
I'm just slipping, being known as the ironing lady. So I was kind of fading away. And now, at my age, you know, a resurgence. Here I am, new lease of life, speaking.
And it's very powerful. I could listen and I could talk to you all day, Jackie, and I could listen to you all day. And I've only got 30 minutes on my show. So I think we'll have to cut it there. But I think there's so much more to explore with you. And I think you've come up with some really good points. So
just quickly, because I'm into promoting people and the businesses. So if people are in Reading, because obviously you're not going to come to the Midlands and do stuff, but
not
if people
are
in Reading, where can they find you? If you you probably don't need any more business, but where can people find you, Jack, if they want to get hold of you?
The Ironing Lady and the Cleaning Ladies in Reading, and I've been told that if you Google us, we come up first anyway.
I'm sure you do. Like I say, it's been wonderful having you on the show. I think I've met quite a lot of people in my life, and you stand up in the top.
Thank you, Kirk. It's been an honour to talk to you today. Thanks for that.
Thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Speak to you soon.
Yeah, thank you. Radio Warwickshire.
Hey, so I'm here now with another amazing lady. We just listened to one, and here's another one. Deborah, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
So we had a bit of a chat before. So just explain what you were talking about with that bit was talking about before.
Well, I didn't know I was dyslexic until I went to university in my 50s to do my degree. And I was in a lecture at one point, and the tutor said to me that what I write down does not match how eloquently, she actually said, eloquently I speak.
Yep.
Was I dyslexic? A little dyslexic, and I said, not that I'm aware of, I didn't know. So she suggested that I went and found out. And basically, cutting a long story short, you go along and you have a little bit of a test, and if you get a certain amount of questions or a certain score, you then go on to another one. And there's now a great big file on me.
Right, okay.
And it explains all your strengths and all your weaknesses in this proper diagnosis. Anyway, it turned out that I was dyslexic, with very strong visual strengths.
Right.
And basically, if I hadn't got those, I don't know how I ever would have managed.
So how did that make you feel then, that initial reaction to that?
It was a really emotional time. I was determined in those tests not to be dyslexic.
All right, that's interesting.
I really worked hard not to get everything right, which in some ways I'm glad I did, because then it was really proved, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then it actually accounted for everything over the years, why I always knew that I didn't want to be on a committee and be the paperwork person. I never wanted to be the secretary, but I liked being on the committee. Why I got really poor results in my English and everything. I could never write things down.
Yeah.
But I thought I could.
Yeah, and but it's interesting, because I didn't find out until I was 44, so it's very, very similar story. And for me, it was very emotional, like it was for you, but it was for the right reasons. I wasn't upset that I was dyslexic. I had a flood of emotion because, that's why I've done that. That's why I did that.
It explained everything. It accounted for why I did nursing at some point, why I did all my exams twice. Most of my life, I've done all my exams twice.
Yeah.
And I always thought it's because I was lazy and I hadn't revised enough. And it just explained it all away. So the long-term emotional feeling was, whoa, you did okay, really, didn't you?
Yeah, you do. And I think you're a classic dyslexic in the way that you interact with people, your compassion, your empathy. And you do a lot of, I know you do a lot of work with children and art with children, which is...
It's really interesting when we do our art workshops, because we have quite a lot of young people who come and paint and draw and create and make big things, and afterwards they write about it.
Yeah.
And their parents come up and say, he never writes things, she never writes things. And when I was at school, you always wrote something down and then illustrated it afterwards. I'm sure that if I was allowed to draw it first, I could have written a whole load more.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I found that our workshops work really well for children that often don't fit into school.
Right.
And also the other thing, I was happy at school. I was really happy, but I didn't come out with any academic achievements because I had loads of friends. But I was the class clown.
Yeah, funnily enough, I was. And the people that know me probably realise, oh yeah, he's not changed.
Yeah,
still the same.
But people didn't. I think the biggest emotional thing was that if you are not on a, you have friends that are really clever and intelligent like yourself on the same level, but they are getting through exams.
Yeah.
You are their friends, but you can't work out why you're not doing the same as them, because you are actually socialising and interested in the same things on the same intellectual level, but academically something...
It's bizarre, isn't it?
If that's the right word.
Yeah, you're right.
It's been lovely to talk to you, and I'll probably get you on for a longer session because I think your story is really interesting. But where can people find you, Deborah, if they want to see some of your work?
I have actually got a website. It's called www.deborahdutton.co.uk.
Excellent.
Did I say it the wrong way around?
I don't know.
But I might have done.
Dyslexic. So if people search Deborah Dutton, they'll find you, won't they? Yeah. Go and have a look at her amazing deck chairs. Thanks for coming on the show, Deborah. I hope to see you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Radio Warwickshire.